Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. As we begin a new trading week, investors do so with further clarity around the course for monetary policy, namely the prospects for rate cuts in the months ahead. For today, I am joined once again by Jason Draho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Today, Jason will spend some time reflecting on last week's Jackson Hole Symposium, along with outline the updated allocation preferences per the latest UBS House view. So with that, Jason, thank you for dropping by on this Monday morning. Looking forward to our conversation. Welcome back.
Good morning, Dan. It's good to be here. Happy Monday.
So, Jason, let's begin with the annual Jackson Hole Symposium, which is now behind us. I'm curious to hear about your overall reflections on what we heard, namely from Chairman Powell during his speech last Friday morning.
Well, the speech was very much sort of, you know, in line with expectations. But I can also say it was a little kind of maybe more dovish than the market than we were anticipating, just in terms of how explicit he was, you know, making comments such as the time has come for Paul to adjust, meaning time for rate cuts to begin. So that was a very clear signal that they will happen in September. So if there's any doubt going into Jackson Hole that cuts would begin in September, I think that pretty much, you know, removed them, barring some truly kind of shocking developments, which seems, you know, very unlikely. He did say that the, you know, the path to get there is, you know, still to be determined. You know, both the frequency and the pace, that is going to depend very much on, you know, the data. So like the direction is clear, but the time and the pace of rate cuts, you know, that's very much kind of data dependent. He did cite that, you know, he feels more confident that inflation is on a sustainable path to return towards 2%. And it's implied that the risks under the dual mandate between price stability and full employment has actually shifted more towards the full employment side. And so they will put greater emphasis on that. And did make a statement that the committee, the FOMC, does not want to see any more kind of labor market weakness, which, without being explicit in terms of what that means for the unemployment rate, I would infer that given the rise all the way up to 4.3%, they don't want to see that to rise, you know, anymore, certainly not anymore kind of significant amounts, yeah, other than like, some month to month kind of, jostling around. So I would sort of interpret that as, they're ready to move and also ready to move, relatively quickly and aggressively if the economic data slows enough, the labor market cools enough. And he also did cite something that a couple other machines kind of, data points or comments that are from a historical perspective sort of relevant. One is that, he noted that the labor market seems to have cooled more or even sort of more in balance versus where it was pre-pandemic. So it is not just fully back to where it was pre-pandemic, but it's even loosened up a little bit more. So that, again, suggesting their willingness to be, fairly aggressive. And then he also, as part of the speech, gave a bit of a history of like how inflation rose, what were the drivers behind it, where we are now. But in so doing so, did cite how in the period prior to the pandemic that one of the benefits of, running towards full employment is that it really pulled people back to the labor market, but also the biggest beneficiaries of positive real wage growth were those who are at the middle and lower income consumers. So I think there was an idea that was, if we just go back to 2016 thereabouts when Janet Yellen was the chair of the Fed talking about running the economy sort of hot, that there's benefits to, from running full employment, that if there even is a little bit of trade-off of having a little bit of risk to the upside of inflation, if the benefit is that you benefit the labor market, you get people structurally back in, this is a positive thing. So I think that mentality still seems to be, at least with Powell himself, and all this suggests to me at least a strong inclination that they want to not see any more labor market weakness, and the Fed, put as it were, is they're ready to activate it if need be. And I think the market reaction, after the text came out and after the speech with equities going higher, bond yields going lower, the dollar going lower, is all consistent with like this is perhaps a little more emphatically dovish than what investors were expecting.
Okay, so with the focus now turning towards the Fed September policy meeting, Jason, can you remind us of CIO's current expectations for rate cuts in September, though also through year end?
Our official forecast at this point in time is for 100 basis points of cuts this year, beginning with a 50 basis point cut in September. I would say that September 1 is very much a kind of a toss-up or coin toss at this point in time. It is, like the Fed, data-dependent. When we made that change, it was sort of predicated on the Fed wanting to be fairly aggressive in getting back to neutral faster rather than or sooner rather than later. And Powell's comments are sort of consistent with that. But it ultimately kind of comes down to the data and specifically what happens with the August payrolls report. If we see, you know, tepid job growth, but also in particular the unemployment rate rises from 4.3% to 4.4%, the odds of a 50 go up, I think, even more, you know, maybe not 100%, but certainly the market pricing pushes it in that direction. And our view is that it would be the more likely scenario of 50 versus 25. If job growth proves to be strong, the unemployment rate stays at 4.3% or ticks down, I think that almost certainly means that the it would only be a 25 basis point cut. And market pricing for September right now is sort of about a 50-50 chance. I think that what it's saying is that, you know, it's data dependent and, you know, your guess in some ways is as good as mine at this point in time, whether the data would show the unemployment rate ticks higher, stays the same, or goes lower, you know, given sort of, you know, the month-to-month, you know, vagaries of how supply and demand in the labor market could evolve and seasonal adjustments. So I think that our overall view has not changed. You know, even if we end up only getting 25 in September, I think that, to me, the key point is that you have a Fed that has signaled that they're ready to move. They're ready to move aggressively if the economy sort of warrants it, including, if not in September, November or December, doing a 50 basis point cut if the economic data is slowing, the labor market is slowing. So I'd almost feel more confident about the 100 basis points for this year. The timing of when a 50 would happen is probably the more uncertain, and it may not be in September, but I think there's a decent chance it's later this year if the economy again kind of slows down, perhaps more than we or the Fed wants to see happen.
So putting the Fed aside for a moment, I do want to turn to positioning. I know the latest UBS House view has been released, is now available. Within, there were some changes in preferences, most notably to fixed income. So can you take a few moments, Jason, to walk us through exactly what changed and why?
Well, the title of the letter this month from our CIO, Mark Helpley, was It's Catching Up. And it's similar to kind of a topic we discussed last week in terms of, you know, the market performance over the summer. It's almost sort of come full circle from an all-time high in July 16th to kind of basically back at those levels now for the S&P 500, with rates clearly lower. So given those moves in the market that were predicated initially on growth fears and now, you know, responding to growth data being a little bit better, but rates a lot lower with the Fed clearly indicating the desire to cut, we had to sort of catch up and sort of reflect our in updates and our preferences. And the main thing that we changed this month in terms of an overall view is that we moved our preference for bonds in fixed income in general as a broad asset class from most preferred to neutral. And the primary reason for that is we have a forecast for the 10-year treasury at year-end of 3.85%, and the 10-year got below that, and so we kind of hit the year-end target. You know, there's certainly possible that yields could go a little bit lower, but also if the economy holds up and they, you know, the yields could kind of back up a little bit, we still feel comfortable with that kind of 3.85, you know, target, which is still a, you know, reasonable income. It's still a, you know, reasonable returns that you can get from buying high quality fixed income. But the price appreciation that was experienced, you know, especially in earlier parts of the summer, in the spring when the yields got up to almost 4.75 in the 10-year, that price return you got from the yield declining from 4.75 to, you know, 3.75, you probably won't get that benefit again, at least not in the soft landing scenario that we think about. So as a result, that was the main driver of taking our asset class kind of preference down for fixed income. Equities overall have remained neutral. We still see, you know, pretty good upside, I think, you know, through year-end, but particularly through next June. Our price target for the S&P is 5,900 at year-end, 6,200 in June of next year. So if you think of the June target from the current levels, it's roughly about a 10% return, so kind of good returns. But the markets have also moved, you know, quite a bit. And in the near term, we think there is a chance certainly of more volatility, more uncertainty. You know, the fact that, you know, the magnitude of the Fed cuts could hinge on really of what happens, like what a single labor market data point suggests that if it goes higher, the unemployment rate, and the Fed does more, that's good for the markets all this week if the Fed's cutting more. But it probably is not enough to offset the rising concerns about if the economy is slowing significantly. So there's certainly near-term uncertainty from a macro perspective. There's also uncertainty for equities in near term, just in terms of the kind of AI dynamic. On Wednesday, NVIDIA reports its second quarter earnings. You know, we've seen in the past when, you know, the earnings season comes in and these companies, especially a company like NVIDIA, that is so critical to AI narrative, if they beat strongly, you can push the market higher. And if they, you know, disappoint to some extent and the margin for error is small, you can see the markets pull back. So for the time being, we think there's enough macro uncertainty, enough sort of more micro AI level uncertainty to not want to suggest completely shifting from fixed income to equities, but still be kind of fully invested across the board in both equities and fixed income to be diversified to get through what could be a bumpy path between now into later into the fall.
So outside of the fixed income shift, what are some other updated positioning views you can share with us?
Well, the main changes that we made within the U.S. would be within the kind of equity sector allocations. There were a number of changes that were made there. Very briefly, we as a team led by David Lefkowitz upgraded financials to a most preferred sector, also upgraded utilities to most preferred. We took industrials down from most preferred to neutral, and then consumer discretionary, that was least preferred, move that to neutral, and materials move that down to least preferred. So that leaves us as a situation where we are most preferred, the tech sector, financials and utilities, and our least preferred on materials and real estate. The financials, adjustment is that, well, now the Fed cuts are pretty much carved in stone, in a soft landing, we think that's an environment where as rates come down, the yield curve re-steepens. We're also seeing a pickup in corporate activity, meaning like M&A activity is picking up. That would benefit some of the large banks. Financials can do relatively well in that environment. At the same time, utilities are, a more defensive sector. They're not particularly expensive at this point in time. And as from a portfolio construction perspective, kind of bouncing off, the cyclical upside from financials from the more defensive aspects of utilities sort of keeps it the overall tilts in the sectors from being overly either cyclical or defensive at this point in time. Materials, that's a little bit more of a global story tied to China's growth, which looks like it's certainly not picking up at this point in time. The upgrade on consumer discretionary reflects the view that the consumer may be okay, but it's also a reflection of the consumer discretionary sector is, Amazon and Tesla are 50% of the index. And we have, reasonable views on those particular stocks as a team. So those are some moving parts within the sectors to reflect some of the adjustments in the outlook, adjustments for the Fed and the economy. Overall, it's still a relatively balanced view in terms of size styles between growth and value and cyclicals and defensives. So just making some adjustments where we think at the margin they can be kind of beneficial. One other change I would note is that our preference for the U.S. dollar went from neutral to least preferred. And we've seen just in the past week, the dollar kind of has been weakening against other major currencies. With the Fed now clearly laying out a path of rate cuts, and even more definitively, given Powell's comments earlier in the week or last week, that's clear that if the rates are going lower and the U.S. economy, outperformance that existed for a good year and a half, if that sort of start, that gap is closing, then the dollar has been relatively kind of expensive. It's been an attractive allocation globally for investors to be in U.S. assets. That outlook is kind of shifting a little bit where there's opportunities outside of the U.S. And we think that sort of dollar weakness, that momentum will continue. So that was a notable kind of other big asset class changes, downgrading the dollar relative to other developed market currencies, in particular, the pound, the euro, and the Swiss franc.
So Jason, before we close out, just spending a few moments on the markets, I know the next 2 weeks likely to be on the quieter side. This is summer holidays for many are ongoing. We do have the upcoming Labor Day holiday weekend here in the U.S. Is there anything investors should be focused on over the next couple of weeks that could move markets?
Well, I already mentioned the NVIDIA earnings that come out on the 28th on Wednesday. That will definitely be market moving for the stock itself, but depending on what the results are, would have implications for any other stock that is kind of AI related, either beneficiary from the spend or is reflected by that. So there's, and given how large these stocks are in terms of their market cap, their influence in the markets overall, that will be it's almost like a macro event when NVIDIA reports. So that is the one event this week. Now they report after the close, so the markets will have Thursday to adjust. By Friday, going into a long weekend, the last long weekend of the summer, it's likely to be a light activity. So I think it's, in general, quiet week after the Fed news, aside from NVIDIA. Coming back after Labor Day, the focus then will be squarely on the August payrolls report that comes out on Friday, September 6th. That is the single most important data point for how the markets will assess the kind of growth trajectory of the labor market and therefore what the Fed is likely to do in September and kind of the rest of this year. And so that will definitely be a significant market moving event depending on how it comes out. But aside from that, I think that week in particular will all be geared towards that data point, and you're unlikely to see investors wanting to make big adjustments or big reallocations going into it, given how significant it kind of shift the outlook one way or another. So I'd expect the next 2 weeks, you know, to be relatively quiet leading into that. And once we get that data print, then of course from that Friday and onwards into September, leading up to the Fed meeting, other factors can definitely kind of move the market. But I think, relatively speaking, I think investors can sort of breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief after the, you know, the Powell speech. You know, they feel the Fed has perhaps, you know, got their backs, but we have to see how the actual data plays out, whether it's earnings for NVIDIA or the payroll support. But other than that, relative calm. But I think we are, you know, seasonally this tends to lead into like a volatile period in September, October historically. Now there's definitely going into the U.S. election chances for volatility, but that may be more of a September 9th and onward story more so than it is for the next 2 weeks.
Well, Jason, thank you as always for spending some time with our listeners, our clients, keeping them informed on what's moving the markets and, of course, the latest positioning recommendations from the UBS Chief Investment Office. I know we will be taking a pause next Monday for the Labor Day holiday here in the U.S., so do look forward to picking back up with our conversation in a couple of weeks.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend. Have a great long weekend.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investor investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.